Hey guys, thanks so much for listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Felissa Rose, and before we get into this episode, I wanted to tell you a little bit about Fangoria Magazine. It's always been my favorite magazine. I grew up on it. It was the first convention I went to, and I've always loved it. It supported Sleepaway Camp. Thank you, Fangoria. You are the best. Fangoria Magazine is now a deluxe 100-page quarterly edition. Each issue includes set visits, deep dives, new discoveries, and minimal ads, all printed on collectible grade paper stock that reimagines the classic magazine for a 2019 audience. You'll see familiar names like Michael Gingold and Tony Timpone, and you'll see bylines that will just rip your dick off, like Barbara Crampton and S. Craig Zahler. And the best part? It's print only, just like the good old days. So go to Fangoria.com to subscribe today. And I want to tell you about the Stan Winston School of Character Arts. Learn online with Hollywood's effects masters at Stan Winston School of Character Arts. Whether you're interested in creature design, sculpting monsters, or makeup effects, Stan Winston School's comprehensive course library has you covered. Featuring hundreds of hours of in-depth video instruction by award-winning industry professionals. Best of all, you can learn on your own time, at your own pace, from any internet-connected device. So start a free 7-day trial now and begin your learning adventure at stanwinstonschool.com.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday.
It's Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Kane Hodder, and I'm here with my friends
Tiffany Shepis
and Felissa Rose.
Today we're going to talk about ageism.
I think it's a great topic. It's a hot topic. And I think the coolest thing about it is that we are celebrated no matter who we are, what we are, how we are, in horror like no other fucking genre or community or what have you. Wow. I think we get better as we get older in horror.
Yeah, I think people do get better as they get older in horror, but there's definitely still a stigma for different
I don't
levels.
See it at all. I think Lynn Shay is having the time of her
She's
career.
She's great.
How old is she? And she's the lead. Caroline Williams and I kicked ass in Killer Rose where, you know, 50, 60, yes, you could be the lead. All of a sudden in Hollywood, you are 25, you're over the hill. We have this horrible idea in Hollywood that you have to, your skin, your look, your weight, your everything has to be in a box a certain way. And it's horrible. It creates so much anxiety for young women, especially women, that I feel in horror we're much more open and again celebrating no matter what you look like, how much you weigh, how old you are. You are loved.
I think majority-wise in the genre, that is true. But there's still Hollywood people that make horror movies still are Hollywood people for the most part that want to make money. They want to have their movies showcased.
What movies are you doing?
But you don't think that people want to have a wider audience than just a bumblefuck film festival in the middle of nowhere? People want their movies widespread. And I think still at the top of the food chain are some agents or studio executives that are going, yeah, maybe we should have the 20-year-old ingenue in here rather than somebody who's necessarily 40.
I don't know. I haven't encountered that. And I do feel that what we feed our audience and what we give to the people who are watching movies is what they accept. So if we're only showing them the 90-pound 20-year-old, what they're watching.
For sure. I agree. I don't think I think it's just, unfortunately, and things are changing now with like who we're putting in movies, but it's still a problem. Like, I want to see more.
Well, obviously, for females, I think it's more of an issue than somebody like me that, you know, plays faceless killers a lot. So I don't think I encounter it as much. I mean, fans still think, wow, Kane's 64, but he still looks like he could kick my ass, which is true. So don't ever doubt me at a convention. Don't think I'm going to be a tough guy and try to push me around because it's not going to work. But I don't think there's the issue with men as much. I mean, don't you think that's fair?
Absolutely
fair. Of course, James Bond is always, you know, how old is James Bond? And his, you know, female counterpart is like 40 years younger.
Always been the, like, men get better with age. The salt and pepper thing is hot. They don't always say that about women, which sucks. Because I do agree that women get better with age, that the more wisdom you have, the sexier you are. Like,
the more confident you are,
absolutely,
the more,
which is why I
think comes out from the inner,
for sure.
Which is why at 20, I didn't know my name.
People like Caroline Williams, you guys, all, everyone still works.
I mean, we could name so many right now who are working at the best time in their career and they're over the age of 35.
Sure. But do you, I mean, not believe that there is that kind of gap between the age of like 30 to maybe 45, that it's hard, Hollywood genre, any that hard to get the job, because it's like you're too young or too old to play the college, you know, co-ed, yet you're too young to play the mom of all the co-eds. Mm-hmm. And I know I've found that hard in my career, that there's this sort of like, well, what am I playing now? You know, like, where's that part? Because, you know, the college co-ed running around going, fraternity party. Like, that's not happening.
There is a very distinct, like, change. You go from, I mean, I remember, but I was, again, late to the party. I did a movie called Slaughter Party where I'm chased by a little person in my bikini. And it, like, you can laugh. And right after that, I went into being the detective, the doctor, the mom, the, you know, so it was like, you do change over. But again, the roles are bigger for me now. Like I was saying, the character parts, they're greater at this time in my career.
And what age were you when you did your first horror film, basically?
15.
Yeah.
For Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
And then I did an NYU thesis for somebody called The Shack. So both of my first horror things were scary movies. You know, and that's a weird thing. And just like you coming into stuff when you're a little kid, and then like you're kind of like growing with your fans. Like, you know, I've made first movies for people that came to meet me also at my first convention. So it's just kind of a strange,
wow, that's amazing
thing that happens like that when you start really, really young. But the shitty side to it is they watch you grow up and get old too.
You look the same. I was 13 when I did Sleepaway Camp, and I didn't go to do the sequels, so it was sort of like I did this horror movie. It had some, you know, it did really well, but then I chose to go to college, so I wanted to kind of explore my life, and I didn't. And I'm so happy I took that path, because I do think when you start young, you can burn out really quickly, and we see that so often in this industry. A child actor, you know, it has a rough road. And so I was glad to have a childhood, go to school. I ran a business, and then I kind of came back into horror again in 2000. It was Fangoria.
But don't you think a lot of the being able to grow with that was partially due to your family? Like, you had good parents that weren't, even though Joan, we made a lot of cracks
at Joan. Oh my God, she was
for being
awesome.
A stage mom, but she was awesome in the way that she still wanted you to have a childhood, where a lot of the young kids that grow up in Hollywood, the parents get seduced by the limelight, and next thing you know, the kids, you know.
And then you're making money, and they're taking the money, and my parents put the money that I made
away for you.
Gave it to me for college. So it was like we were very structured in that they wanted me to go get my education. That was super important in my house. And, you know, I just didn't really. And also, it was the 80s. I wasn't the look, you know, for film and commercials and TV. Everybody was like very blonde and freckly and, you know, red hair.
Sure, not now. You're good. But do
yeah,
do
now,
you,
baby.
Do either of you think, like, because what age did you start, Kane?
Well, I mean, I started in stunts at 22.
So pretty young, too.
Pretty young, yeah.
Do either of you guys think that the age you started had an outcome on your career? Like, if you would have started later or earlier, it would have been a different path?
Well, with mine in particular, if you're not a descendant of a successful stunt person, it's an incredibly hard business to get into. So, and I knew nobody. So the fact that I started at 22 was helpful. I almost wish I had started earlier, but it was helpful because for the first 8 years, I couldn't make a living on just stunts. So I had to be doing other things. So if I had started that process later, it just delays the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So the earlier you start as a total beginner knowing no one, it helps because there's that lag time. Every once in a while, somebody gets lucky and happens to meet the right people and starts working a lot at the beginning, but not very often unless you have an uncle or a father or mother, aunt, somebody in the business. That is tremendously helpful. Oh, so you are the nephew of so-and-so?
Sure.
Oh, maybe I'll give you a shot. Because not only are they thinking that you might be qualified or have better abilities, but they're also thinking in the back of their mind that his uncle or aunt is a stunt coordinator also.
Yeah,
if I
get more jobs.
Them a job, I'll get a job in return for doing that. So yeah. It's a very nepotistic business, and it just takes a long time. So that's what helped me. By the time I started really making a living, you know, I was getting close to 30.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's why I ended up, you know, getting married a little later in life and having kids later, because I didn't want to have that complicated part.
Sure. What about you?
Yeah, no, I always say Sleepaway Camp gave me a life, you know, gave me everything. So had I not started young, I would never have had that part. I would never have, you know, had Sleepaway Camp as a platform to jump off and do all of the, you know, the horror genre, like it's played out. So I'm thrilled that I started young, but I'm also happy that I didn't continue on that road and I was able to, again, go to school as well as have business behind me, because it is show business. So I felt like not only do you have to learn how to, you know, the craft, but you have to learn how to navigate this business, you know, and have really good sense of how to conduct yourself and handle,
sure,
you know, that
I really admire the way you did it, to be honest, because somebody that starts at that young age could get so starry-eyed that that's all they think about for the rest of their lives.
And that sort of not happened with me, the starry-eyed part, but the little bit of, because, you know, here you were making movies and making money at a young age and in a genre that, you know, you go to conventions and people are excited to meet you, but you're not quite famous and you're not quite anything, you know, you're not Hollywood standard of anything, but you get a bit of an ego in the regards that it's like, well, all these jobs will keep coming, because they're right now, like they're coming at me hand over fist. And at the age of like 17, you're a bit of like most 17-year-olds, a little flighty and a little more about the party than they are about the work. And so for me, I wish that it happened a little bit later, where I had that kind of party out of my system and took opportunities a bit more seriously, because there were certainly auditions that now I would kill to get, that I just was like, there'll be another one, I'm going to Vegas, you know, because that's what you do at 19 years old, right?
Of course, absolutely.
So I think there's those parts, like there's like the catch-22 of like getting success early, getting success later in life, you know, you kind of can get your demons out before it's time to work.
I honestly feel like now, again, like turning 50, it's been the best time in my career ever. So I'm the happiest right now.
But do you think it's just because you're older, or because you've actually had some of the best work in the last many years, like producing your own stuff? Like, that's a big deal.
Yeah, like, I'd like to think that I work hard and I take it very seriously and I respect, you know, the work. I don't know what it is. I think that I finally feel more confident in myself. You know, when you're young, I mean, I was very insecure, and like Kane, I had a family later, so I had, my focus may have been split as well. So now that I'm, you know, my kids are getting older and they're happy, I feel a lot of, I feel like I'm ready and I'm open and embracing it.
Well, let me ask you guys, that do you think there's a factor that you will be remembered for your career from a certain age you were, because maybe that movie is more notable or something, or is it just that, you know, you think your career has just followed a certain path and you're just remembered for that? Do you think there people remember you from a certain age?
Such a great question.
Age?
I think my stuff, just because, like we've talked about on other episodes, I've never have had the big, you know, quote unquote iconic movie that, you know, put me on a path. Like, I just did a lot of them back to back in a short amount of years that kind of put me, like, you know, on the Friday night sci-fi channel originals, like back to back to back to back. So there was just an influx of my projects. So I think maybe if you're going to remember me at all, it would just be for a span rather than, oh, it was from this killer piece of work. I wish I had that, but I don't.
I mean, for me, I think people will always remember me as the 13-year-old girl from Sleepaway Camp. But I'm hoping now, like I've been saying, the character work that I've taken on, like in Victor Crowley and a, you know, a few other projects, that people will remember that as well, because I feel like I'm doing some of my best work now as, you know, an older person in all in these films. So hopefully, you can only hope.
Do you feel, Kane, because, you know, you said you started in your 20s and like being like a stunt guy trying to make his mark originally, are you more comfortable now? Like, I mean, obviously you're going to be more comfortable because you're well known on a set, but is there still ever that like apprehension when you walk onto something new? Like, am I going to fuck this up? Is this going to be okay? Like, do you guys have that nervousness
still?
I think so.
I mean, most actors in general are a little insecure, I think. So you always think, that wasn't very good. We've even done it here.
I was going to say, even like
at the end, we'll say, was that
just now what I said? Like, oh, I hope people remember that. I'm like, oh, I didn't. I hope that wasn't like obnoxious.
See, that's how insecure we are.
We're just a bunch of insecure babies.
Bunch of babies.
And as a stunt coordinator, the thing that's a little tricky is walking on a set, knowing that the director or the lead actors want to do as much as they think they can do with the stunt activity. So that's a little nerve-wracking as, you know, a stunt coordinator trying to figure out, geez, I want them to do some stuff because I think it's better for the film when you can see the actor, that you don't have to shoot him from behind because it's a stunt double. So you can see the actor doing some of it. It helps the illusion. But, man, it's nerve-wracking. Like, I think I've talked about this before, but when I was doing the movie Seven, there was a bunch of us stunt guys in cars out downtown L.A. kind of sliding and being in traffic when Kevin Spacey's double ran out into traffic, and then Brad Pitt, doing it himself, ran out chasing him. So you talk about pressure. You're in a car and you're sliding towards Brad Pitt. You better not hit the motherfucker,
because wow,
you are not going to be well-liked if you hit the main actor.
Jesus.
So he was very capable with physical stuff. He was jumping on cars as they're almost sliding to a stop, jumping across, chasing Spacey's character. And he jumped on my car and jumped off on to do a kind of a cool slide off the car next to me, and he put his arm through the back window and cut the shit out of his wrist, which, if you ever watch the movie, Brad Pitt suddenly has a big cast on his arm.
That's right.
He had to have surgery
on
it, and because it was cut so badly. And we're all like, you know, even though he jumped off my car and onto the stunt guy next to me, no, it wasn't our fault because it just happened. He hit his hand against the back window and it went through. But everybody's just like on the set. It's like, ah! They see blood coming out of his arm.
God.
Everybody freaks out except him. He was like, okay, let's wrap it up. Let's finish this sequence and then I'll go to the hospital. And we're all looking around at each other saying, that's a fucking stunt guy's attitude. So we love the guy because of that, you know, kind of attitude. Didn't freak out like some actors would have, because it was a pretty good injury. But they had to write in, you know, why he suddenly had a cast.
When you're on a project and you're doing stunts, like, often you feel the pressure of everyone looking at you going, you know, oh, she's going to be a baby because she got hurt, or, you know, which is why I think it's sometimes better for your team, like as a stunt team, to have your stunt people doing the bigger deals, right? I mean, just it'll, in case someone does get hurt.
Right,
that,
and it'll typically look better.
It'll look better. You know? I always get worried because I want to do it all, and then I'm like, I hope it looked good. I hope I didn't look like shit. I had to strangle this woman and stuff her head in a toilet bowl, and I was like, oh!
Swirly.
Yeah, but I also didn't want to hurt
that
her.
Seems mean.
Fucking like that, you know.
Wow.
So get my
dude, and was it a stunt woman that you
it
were?
It was, yeah.
Oh, so that's good.
Oh, there
we
had
go.
A great
that
time
helps.
Together, though. It was like in this stall and just doing all this crazy
you
shit.
You don't remember her name,
I
do you? By any
lot.
Chance
I
of just seeing fire knew her. Yeah.
Do you guys think that the choices that you make on a film now compared to like at the beginning of your career, like does it have anything to do with like age, the way you feel about stuff, what you want your kids to see, anything, or is it just exactly the same as what you did
well
before?
For me it's completely different because I, you know, in early 30s whatever, wanted to do every possible thing I could. Mm-hmm. And now I'm a little more sensible. A good example, my wife and I were visiting her sister. They're living in a high-rise apartment building in Denver right now because they're going to build a house where we are in Park City.
Oh, nice.
So we're finally going to be close to each other.
When you guys want to stalk Kane Hodder, Park City, Utah.
And we'll be there, too.
We'll be there outside the window in the bush. Thank you.
And they lived on the, trying to remember, like, I don't know, 30 floors up or something. And out on their deck, they had, if you climbed over the railing, there was a like a 6-foot area, and they were right on the corner of the building.
Oh.
And I said to Jace, said, I need to have a picture of me standing right on the
Jesus
corner
Christ.
Of that with the Rocky Mountains behind me. And he said, you know, do you really want to do that? And I said, well, come on, I have to. It's going to be the coolest picture ever. Just hundreds of feet down, and I'm just standing there with the mountains. And I actually said, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't.
Wow.
And that's a big change.
Wow.
And so I didn't do it because I know Susan would have been pissed, and I can't blame her.
Amazing.
You know, why? Why do you have to do that? So I actually had, you know, a thought of, hey, let's take the sensible
route. Maybe this isn't a bad, this is a bad idea.
I thought I'd be disappointed in myself, but
no, that was a great choice.
What about you?
I think it's just, I look for a role that I can really sink my teeth into now. I really want to do fun work and great work. And it's always about the people also that are around. Mm-hmm. You want to work with people you love. And so I think I'm just looking at great characters and scripts, looking for something fun.
And don't you think that, like you just said, that a lot of times we'll accept a role and it's not always about the money. It's almost never about the money with us, you know.
Yeah.
But you'll be more inclined to accept a role if it's certainly if it's something different that you've always wanted to challenge
yourself
with. But also people that you're going to be performing with. If it's someone you know, you're like, that would be fun.
That would be a good time. Right. Like when we did Sickle together years and years ago. Like I was like, they're looking for their bad guy. And I was like, what about Kane? And like I think we did like a little tiny project together in the past. But I was like, how great would that be to be on a set for, you know, a couple weeks in the middle of the desert with somebody that you actually know and that you trust. Right. And I knew that he had done so much stunt work that like, fighting me like I'm never going to get hurt. So like already that's out of your head. And so you can just concentrate
on
the work.
I think some of the scenes that we did together are great
just really
because
great.
We knew each other so well.
You know? And I think that's a good point. Like I think now we also, when we're on a project, we can recommend each other.
Sure.
You know,
often do it, right?
Yeah. And it's great because we have a fucking blast together.
It's interesting because like my choices like for many years were just wanting to be on every horror movie I could. And it was like, it came in, it didn't matter, I wanted to do it. And it really was about the fun and the camaraderie and, you know, just being so immersed in the genre because I think since I was such a little kid, to me it was just like, this is awesome, I could make a career of this. Like, I don't give a shit what we're making as long as there's blood.
Yeah.
And now, as a bit more of a grown-up, I'm like, what can we do that's different? What can we do that's quality? And because so many times, then, you know, like we talked about this as friends before, like, you know, you show up, you know your lines, you're prepared. And if somebody else isn't, you're a little bit like, wow, what a bummer. What a letdown. And I'm kind of sick of seeing those movies. Like, I want to see stuff as the finished product going, holy shit, we all came together and this was great. So that's where my kind of mindset has changed from more like quantity over quality to now it's like as much quality as possible.
And with me, I never anticipated doing any dialogue. I wanted to be a stunt person. That's all I dreamed about. And that's all I ever expected. And if someone had told me at the beginning, you know, you're going to love acting with dialogue just as much as you love stunts, I would have said, you're full of shit. There's no fucking way.
Yeah.
And sure enough, I do. It's just as much of a challenge, just a different kind of challenge.
Sure.
To, you know, performing that way. And it's nice that I've been lucky enough to, you know, because I'm not really doing much in the way of stunts anymore. Coordinating, yes, but not really performing as much. So it's nice that I can keep just as busy with something else I love. So I've been
very fortunate.
Yeah.
And that's also, that's why I started producing, because I felt like I wouldn't forever want to be in front of the camera. I love producing because I liken it to being a mom, putting everything together. Somebody's crying, somebody's hungry, somebody needs a hug, somebody's a fucking asshole, you know. And so, you know, it was kind of a natural progression. As you get older, you want to expand, challenge yourself. It's always about challenging yourself. And maybe we could get challenged by some questions that we have from
Nice. Wow, she is the segue queen.
INC says they want to know, would you ever want to direct or produce your own film? Directing has always been a little bit of a scary thought for me, because where it's pretty easy for me to say, like we just talked about, I showed up, I knew my lines, I did my job, and I can blame the rest of the bad movie on somebody else. If I direct it, that's kind of all on my shoulders. And that's a little bit of a terrifying thought. There was a short that I wanted to do for a while. And then I was like, I don't know. And maybe it'll come about. But I think it would have to be a miniature version, like a fun size short film, before I would delve into anything bigger. Producing wise, I've done some of that. That is a lot of fun. But like Felissa was saying, it's such a like a mom job, and like I don't know if I have in me the caring side to really coddle, you know, a bitchy actor. Or like, huh?
That was so cute. I don't think I have, you know.
I don't. Like I would tell 100 people and say, shut up. Like, grow the fuck up. We're paying you.
Don't have that.
You know, we're paying you. Go away. Like, I'm not gonna hold your hand.
The one that I got, which I always tried not to answer. I've been asked before, but I always avoid giving the answer, and it is, what is my least favorite Jason kill? Of course, people always ask, most favorite.
Most favorite,
I've answered that a million times, but least favorite, I don't want to, you know, offend anybody or any of the filmmakers and stuff, so I always avoid answering, and I don't really want to answer right now, Creighton Duke, but on Jason Goes to Hell, that entire film, I believe I only killed one person, because the evil of Jason went into other people, so I don't count that. I didn't do the killing. So the only one I killed was the character Creighton Duke, and it's like with a bear hug, and face to face, and then as I'm squeezing him, he, you know, some shitty blood comes out of his mouth that he had in there to spit, and spit it right in my fucking eye. And so I squeezed the fuck out of that guy. It was the actor, so Stephen Williams. Great guy. He did a great job in the movie, but he spit in my fucking eye. So you're going to pay for that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't it really like your fault when the eyes are the only thing exposed?
Well, yes, I guess it is. But I only really could see out of one eye in that movie. So most of the times I played Jason, I could only see out of one eye.
That's hard.
And that one had a lens on it, so.
What's your favorite Victor Crowley kill?
Yeah,
ask you that all the time.
Well, clearly it's when you die.
No. He's still with the first hatchet.
I am. I'm sorry. Hey,
wait. Who's killing the first hatchet?
Am I number two?
Mrs. Permadio with the...
Oh, that's great. That's a great kill.
Come on, man. You rip a...
You're going to compare her face and my vagina? I mean...
Well, close. They are both gaping. So,
Oh, wow. What? To that.
And see, this is your friend.
Oh,
Kane Hodder.
My friend.
Your friend. Now I'm fucking actually happy I'm acquaintances with you,
asshole. I'm going to get letters.
Getting back to...
Why are you saying that
my question.
What is your question?
Were you nervous about how other kids your age would react to you after viewing Sleepaway Camp when it was released? You know, quite honestly, I wasn't really worried. I thought it was just super cool, like, to act in a film, and I hadn't really... I just thought I'd go back to school quietly and there wouldn't be much chatter about it. But, you know, there were kids who had their own ideas about wanting to kind of spit on me and because I would or throw gum in my hair because they thought, oh, she's gonna be arrogant about having done a movie. But quite honestly, it was the opposite. I was insecure. I had left eighth grade for 2 months, so I wasn't there in the
because
beginning
of that? No.
To make the movie. But then when I got to school, other girls were super kind and protected me, so it was fine. But I figured after they saw the movie, they could in fact be terrified. They didn't want a curling iron up their vagina.
I did.
You brought the vagina back.
So we're all, yeah. But the truth is, you never got anything up your vagina, so I think you're getting killed today. So get
by what method, I wonder?
Hand me that curling iron.
The curling iron.
So on today's Fangoria Podcast Network, Tiffany Shepis gets killed by way of, where's the curling iron?
No, this is
you want to shove that? By the bat up her JJ.
Oh my God!
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers, Dallas Sonier, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mangiarides, and Justin Martell. Produced by Natasha Passetta. Associate producer, Jessica Safavamare. Art and design by Jason Kozlerich. Sound recording, design, and mixing by Natasha Passetta. Music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi and Rachel Wilson.